Welcome to episode 79 of Frank Reactions, the podcast where we help you profit from the digital era through better customer experiences online and off. My name is Tama Frank. Today's guest is Marianne Vanella, who is the CEO of the Vanella Group, which is a company that basically does outsourced sales prospecting calls. Now, obviously, sales is a huge part of what shapes a customer experience, and yet we often do forget that it has such a role in shaping how people perceive us. And as Marianne points out, far too often companies put poorly paid, poorly trained staff on the sales prospecting duty. That, she would argue, is a big mistake. In the interview, Marianne tells some incredible horror story anecdotes of bad sales calls she's taken or seen, and she answers my questions about whether we even still need to do sales cold calls and how to do them better. It's a fairly long interview, so I will get right into it now and chat with you briefly at the end.
I'm Marianne Vanella, and I'm CEO of the Vanella Group. I worked with startups during the whole dot-com boom, and I led sales and marketing organizations, and then all the way up to $500 million a year companies where I was running sales organizations. So I became a consumer of outsourced services. So, yeah, and it was really interesting because the things that I was looking for just didn't exist.
Like what?
You know, I was looking for, okay, here's my number. Here's the pipeline I need. Here's the numbers I need to make. Here's what I got to report to the board, and here's what they're looking for. And what can I do to scale this program to meet that? And then they would show me what application they make their callers use or how many attempts that they make them dial, or, you know, they can't get to the next screen unless they answer this question. And I would think I couldn't care less what you're using on the front line with them. What I'm looking for is what kind of predictability can I assign to this? And, well, if you do X amount of hours, we guarantee this many attempts or this many touches. I'm like, that doesn't mean anything to me. So there was no substance behind it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just very activity-based or appointment-based.
Yep.
We'll get you appointments. Okay, what are those appointments based on?
So in the selling process, apart from having a process, which is obviously crucial, what do you do that's different from what other people trying to do B2B selling do?
Well, a lot of it is just the vantage point that I have. I understand all the different stages. I understand the journey that it happens within a pipeline. And so a lot of what we're doing is addressing those different stages. So there's a big component to what we do in helping companies to really understand what's happening, why are they losing deals. Like I was just talking about this with somebody the other day. I knew this one company that they were scheduling 600 appointments just to close 30 deals.
Wow.
That many of them would get wrecked. If they needed to close 30, they needed to have 600 because the whole process was so broken of qualifying and how to handle prospects and how to engage with them and who's engaging with them and all of that. So I believe that you put your best resources on the front lines.
Yay! I'm so happy to hear you say that.
I hear what people are doing, and it's so bad out there. The types of engagement and the level of people that they're putting on the front lines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I always say it's not that people don't take a call. They just don't take a bad call. So people are much less tolerant of bad calls. And so the whole statement of, oh, people don't take calls and people don't take cold calls and people don't, and it's like, that's not what's happening. It's that people now are just much more empowered to shut down a bad call. A lot of times the people that are planning these types of programs are people that have a strong distaste for calling. And so they don't want to spend a lot of money on it. So therefore, they're going to look for something that meets what they think they need to do at the lowest possible denominator. They're losing a lot of opportunities because they didn't have somebody on those front lines that can engage in a meaningful way and have that kind of conversation and really find something of value on those calls, because it's just not going to happen if you put some, you know, green bean junior person in the front.
So, I mean, I participated in and watched a conversation, and I think this may be the group where I came across your name, in a LinkedIn group, where people were talking about whether initial contact should be made through phone calling or through email.
Right.
And what I found was, you know, there's a diversity of opinion there. A lot of particularly older men, I think, feel, well, if they're not telephoning me, they're not serious. And that's coming up against the fact that particularly millennials are terrified of using phones for voice.
Right. Yeah.
And in my own case, I'm not a millennial. I'm more of the age of these older men I'm talking about.
Right.
But I've always, you know, my big fear about making phone calls is I don't want to interrupt somebody. Whereas if I send them an email, they can choose to engage with me or not and do so at their own time. So can you comment a little bit about that debate?
Yeah, and that's part of the problem in a lot of organizations. Like if they have a sales organization that the composition of it is a lot of young people that aren't able to just call up somebody and just start having a conversation, they're going to see all kinds of reasons why that doesn't work. This is how you need to engage with people. The other thing that everybody's up against is this whole marketing automation adoption.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's almost like people need to pass an aptitude test before they should be allowed to buy it, right? Because they buy marketing automation and then they just tee up all this gobs of bad content. And so there's tons and tons of emails going out. And one of the new trends is, hey, Marianne, I haven't heard from you yet. They forwarded me their last email. And either, number one, you've been kidnapped by aliens.
Oh,
yeah. Number two, you don't want it. And it's like, come on, dude. Yeah, this is so cheesy. First off, you didn't even write it. This is coming out of your automation. And second, it's, if you want to have a conversation with me, just call me and have something meaningful to say. I got one call from a person that she calls me. She was super timid and super nervous and said, Is this Marianne Vanilla? And I said, yeah. And she goes, well, what's your title? I'm all, do you have it? And she said, well, it says you're a CEO. And I said, well, then you have it. I go, why did you ask? And she said, well, because usually CEOs don't answer their phone. And I said, well, you're calling my cell phone. So, and you're using a local number. So I, you know, there was a probability that I'd answer it. She goes, oh, because yeah, CEOs usually don't answer their phone. I said, do you have internet access? And she said, yeah. And I said, so when you get somebody with a CEO or a VP title, you should Google them first so that you can avoid that. And she goes, oh, okay, well, maybe is there somebody in your company? And they were calling.
What?
They were calling with a, it was a very large Fortune 500 tech company, and they're an outsourced provider. And and she said, well, could you get me to somebody that's over your networking and security and storage? I'm like, okay, first off, that's a big topic. And second, you've got the CEO now. Wouldn't you want to just talk to me?
Yeah, exactly.
She said, well, usually the CEO isn't over. I said, can I give you a tip? And she said, yeah. I said, we've been on the phone for like 6 minutes, and the only thing that we've talked about is that I can't possibly be a CEO because I've answered my own phone. And that you don't use the internet to look at people, that you are trying to find somebody way down chain from me to talk to, and you should have just talked to me. And we haven't talked, and I said, now I got to go.
Right.
She says, I don't have time now. And so then she goes, well, are you doing anything with, and she throws this big topic out there where 100 different platforms. I said, look, the company that you're calling for, we're actually an approved vendor of, and we're not buying any of that stuff, and I'm good. So now we've got, now I'm, somehow this phone call has opted me into product line, and now I'm getting blasted with emails from it.
In Canada, that's illegal.
Yeah, I know. It was a company they just acquired, and so they're out promoting it. And I thought, you know, That's the typical call that people get.
That's appalling.
That's why people don't like calls. But conversely, to your point of people that prefer a call, if you call somebody and have a peer-level conversation with them and just open a conversation, you know, because the thing about email is, well, I'm going to approach you in this timid way. I know you're so busy. It's like, well, hey, I'm busy too, right? And if you're a peer of this person, then just call them and have a conversation. You don't have to ask permission. You don't have to talk up to them. You don't have to open the conversation with an apology.
Mm-hmm.
Just like how you called me, right?
Although, I've got to say, I did first reach out through email. I didn't call.
It wasn't a biggie email. It was just a very peer level.
I gave a very clear reason for why I wanted to talk to you. And I provided a benefit.
Absolutely. So that's the thing. I do think that email doesn't hurt when you do it right. But you also have to remember that people are getting hundreds of emails every day. And a lot of them are bad emails.
For sure. So let's talk a little bit then about making that initial telephone contact. First of all, obviously, you've got to track down their phone number. And I mean, you're great because yours is fairly easy to find. But if you're approaching the CEO of a big company or a senior executive of a big company, those numbers are a bit more hidden.
Sure.
So, I mean, when I've done it, I'll start by asking to speak to their assistant. And usually I start that way. But what do you recommend as a way to start making the contact so you can even get the right phone number to call?
If a company calls me and they say, we want to call CEOs of Fortune 500 companies and sell this thing, and I stop and say, okay, so is that even a reasonable thing to do?
Mm-hmm.
Because is that really your buyer? They think, well, we've met CEOs at conferences, and they say, you know, they push us down to the person and they buy it. And I said, yeah, but when you're calling, that's a whole different venue. So is that really the person you should be calling?
What do you mean when you're calling, that's a whole different venue? Can you elaborate on that?
So if you're calling, so if you meet a CEO at a conference and you have this conversation and they say, yeah, this would be great. And if you can save us all this money, fantastic. Let's talk. I'm going to connect you with so-and-so that's over that. That's a whole different introduction to the opportunity than calling a CEO and saying, I want to talk to the CEO and they don't know who we are. So
right.
In that case, you need to say, is the CEO really the person that you want to talk to? Are you going to get the most traction calling CEOs, or are you going to get the most traction calling the right person that's going to be driving an initiative? So it's not so much the calling so super high, because you can also overshoot your goal. And then you don't get results. So just like you were saying about admins are great, because a lot of people view them as this real, you know, enemy guard of, you know, how do you get past them? And so they lie to them, or they try to trick them, or they pretend they know the person. Oh, hey, is Bill there? Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're very astute. They're very well paid. They probably make more than that sales rep in many cases.
Yeah.
And they are great to partner with. What are you saying to them? So they're basically trying to sell the admin, and the admin isn't the person buying that. And they either, number one, don't want to hear it, or two, they don't even know what you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
or it's the wrong person or whatever. And so they shut you down.
Mm-hmm.
So really just partnering with the admin and finding out and helping them to understand who the right person to talk to is, what's the footprint that their department is over, that their executive is over. Is this something that would make sense? And they will figure out a way to get you in there when you partner with them and treat them like a peer.
Yeah.
So that's number one. And then also treat everybody the same. That's never, if somebody calls my company and talks down to my admin, they will never get anything from me.
You bet. Absolutely.
So that tells me a lot about them.
Yep.
That they're, and especially if they lie, like,
oh,
you have to tell me.
Yeah.
It happens all the time that people call and, oh yeah, Marianne, this and that, or they exaggerate the company that they're with.
Yeah. Okay. So the admin thing is one route. Now, the other thing, of course, that commonly happens now is you get voicemail.
Sure.
So you've never had contact with this senior executive. What would you say on a voicemail?
Just be very brief and don't make it. I notice sometimes people talk a lot about what they do or their title, or, hi, this is so-and-so. I'm the Western Region VP of blah, blah, blah. And you chew up all your time talking about yourself. So leave a very short voicemail based on what you want to talk about. and also not to leave it in their court to call you back.
Okay.
So don't say, I'll look forward to hearing back from you. Then
you'll be looking for a long time.
Yeah. And I tell people to call and leave yourself a voicemail and listen to what you're saying, because so many times the messages that people leave are so bad that they're talking too fast, or there's a bunch of static, or who knows what, but their voicemail isn't even getting heard. It's important to construct your voicemail based on what you want to achieve. Don't try to sell them something on a voicemail. I had one time we sent an opportunity over to a company. This was a number of years back, and one of the VPs that we had talked to were really interested in the platform, but they were really concerned about the budget. So in all the messaging back to the VP, the rep says, well, we can do financing and this and that. And I said, you haven't even talked to him yet, and you're trying to finance the deal. It's like, talk to the guy.
Right.
And then build a connection and then figure out what's going to work. You guys haven't even talked about budget, and you've already given the impression that it's so expensive that they need finance.
Yeah.
It's really important to think and to remember that the prospect only has your words or your email or whatever it is that's happening at that moment, and they're building a frame based on what they know. So they're going to draw on what they know, and that's why the words you use and the things that you say are very important, because you can say things that they pull from the wrong database, so to speak, and they go down this whole ditch of, oh, this isn't what we need to do. This isn't who we want to work with. So, for example, if you're calling a mining company about whatever it might be, and you use an example of a retailer that you help them solve all their staffing problems at retail stores, they're going to, and whether your application applies to them or not, you've already lost them.
Yeah.
So that's really important to put thought into what you're doing. So voicemails work. When you leave somebody a voicemail, just let it sit there, and they will, it leaves an imprint of your name. Mm-hmm. You can make a strong statement about why you want to talk to them.
So what sort of thing would you say in that? Like if it's a totally cold call.
Well, that's what people pay us for. No, but they have what we do is we structure it based on what the company does, what mm-hmm. the results are, and you've got to have something compelling in there.
Mm-hmm.
So really, all you want that voicemail to do is to have the person say, tell me more,
mm-hmm.
right? Tell me more.
So presumably you want to say something then that shows that you've done a little bit of homework on them.
Yeah, you've got to know the industry. You've got to know some problems that they're dealing with.
Yeah.
And that's something that's really lacking. I would say oftentimes that is really lacking in the whole domain of sales anymore. When we used to meet face-to-face, and I've talked about this a lot, is when you go in somebody's office, you can build a story about this person, about the company. You can walk in and you can see what they're like. What is this a conservative company? Is this a company that is a little more cost sensitive? Is this a company that, do they have more legacy technology? I work in enterprise tech exclusively, so I'm always looking at it from a tech standpoint, but it still applies to everything. I can understand a lot about them, and then I can understand about that person. So what is this person like? Is this person more of an adventurer? Are they a risk taker? Are they more innovative? What types of things are they doing? How committed to their company are they? You know, when you go in their office, do they have all kinds of company stuff in there and all kinds of things they're really proud of? Or is it more not company stuff in their mm-hmm. office? So there's this whole story that you can build based on their office space, on their workspace.
Yeah.
So now all these things are happening remotely.
Mm-hmm.
I remember 20 years ago when we were calling for enterprise tech companies, the internet wasn't what it was today, obviously, and that the level and depth of information about solutions wasn't out there. So the sales rep was still this necessary evil in the process, right? So yeah, we got to bring a rep in here because we need access to clients. We want to go visit a client site. We need some tech information. We need white papers. We need this and that. Today, you can go get all that without a rep.
Yep.
And you can get on LinkedIn and find customers to see if they want to reference the company or not. So you don't need the sales rep for the same things as before. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, now the sales rep's role has changed. I still see the sales reps that think, I'll talk to them first and then I'll see if I want to. So I don't want to go spend a bunch of time researching something if there's nothing in it for me. Mm-hmm. So there's this really strong what's in it for me. Mm-hmm. So the reason that I painted that whole picture of all the information that you absorb from an in-person meeting, people now have put that all in a virtual workspace. And oftentimes that's in LinkedIn. And even people that were a little more reluctant to share information maybe 5-8 years ago, now they've kind of, through peer pressure, they've been forced to do that. So even the people that were a little more conservative are now putting out a lot more information about themselves because they have to be competitive.
Yeah.
And so they have to self-promote. The thing that has happened is people now, they put all this information out there that you can still build that same story that you could build from in their office just by spending that little bit of 10 minutes or whatever it is to look up that person before. Because the other thing that's happened is buyers have gotten a lot smarter.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking up companies. They're looking up customers. They're looking up case studies. They're looking up all these things. So they're going into meetings pretty informed.
Yep.
And then a sales rep walks in there. They don't even know who's going to be in the meeting. They didn't look any of them up. Maybe one of them worked at a former customer of theirs and they were a good reference for them. They don't know that. So they're limping in this meeting, totally handicapped in against the whole backdrop of the thing because they didn't do their homework. And mm-hmm. I think that's something that really needs to be addressed It's actually more of a systemic problem, too, because there's so much pressure put on reps to sell, sell, sell.
Well, that's what I was thinking. You were talking at the beginning about the numbers and what they're measuring. And if they're measuring numbers of calls per hour or per day, you're
right.
Not giving people the motivation to spend any time doing researching. It's all just dialing.
Right. You've got to be able to do this in 10 minutes. When we go in and engineer, Salesforce process is you need to be able to update a record in 10 minutes. You mm-hmm. need to be able to do everything in 10 minutes because anything more than that is really going to impact you. And you have to be able to, and it's really about critical thinking. And so that's where your hiring comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you want to hire cheap and you want to hire people that are unable to think their way through that, then you're going to end up with all this stuff crashing and burning on the front lines.
Yeah.
You really need a lot of strategy and deliberate actions in early engagement, but that's where companies want to spend the least amount of money
mm-hmm.
on that. And so how do you fix that? And so I know with us, we bake a lot of that into our process to help stop that because if they're wrecking what we're doing, it's going to reflect poorly on us. So I have to make sure that our stuff works. So I do a lot of work to bake all that into the process to educate reps and make sure everything works and monitor it and all that. But not everybody does that. So that's another thing that organizations need to look at.
Yeah. The customer journey map.
Yeah. So here's somebody that came to the site. What happens?
Yeah.
I mean, how many times do you click on something that you get It kind of makes me laugh because you think, who does this stuff? So you get something that talks about one thing and you click on it and you get to the site and there's no phone number to call them. Even a big enterprise company and you look and they're
especially
all,
big enterprise companies.
Send us an email.
Or even worse, they make you fill out a form.
Yeah. And you're thinking, okay, I'm ready to schedule a meeting right now.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about this. And now I have to fill out a form and I need to wait. And I can't even talk to anybody.
Yeah.
I had an experience not long ago with a very large ERP/CRM provider. I got on their site and, of course, couldn't talk to anybody. So filled out a form. Couldn't talk to anybody. I looked and looked, nothing, couldn't find any type of number to reach to answer simple questions. Then about a week later, I start getting calls, mm-hmm. and I'm getting calls from their partners and from them yeah. and from, so that lead ended up getting followed up on probably 15 times after we already bought the thing from them. This is the kind of stuff that's happening, and it's just so bad. Mm-hmm. So somebody needs to stop and say, okay, what's really happening here? Because you have all these groups and they're so partitioned off. So the people that are running the marketing automation that are sending the leads to the sales team and the people that are running the frontline customer service people and the inside reps and the biz dev reps and the SDRs or, you know, slash SDRs and then the field reps, that all of this stuff happens. And then the other thing that happens is when you do have people that talk to you, nobody writes anything down. So then you have somebody else, you talk to them again or your next follow-up, and then you're starting from zero again because nobody wrote it down.
Which is crazy. There's no excuse for that with current technology. I mean, yeah. That is just ridiculous.
Yeah. Like I wrote an article, are you putting your prospects on a timeout? Because companies decide when they want to engage, and it's really your customer decides when they want to engage. And it depends on the size deal. Yeah, if it's a $500 thing and they want to talk for an hour a year before they're going to buy it, yeah, okay, that's not a good use of an hour. But if you're talking about $1 million investment and they're in an early blueprint stage and they're trying to get, you know, they're trying to campaign for some budget mm-hmm. and they want to talk with you and you're like, call me when you have a budget.
No.
They're not going to call you. And that happens because when you talk with the rep, and I can't tell you how many times this happens, is the first thing that they want to ask is, well, do you have a budget? And people don't really plan like that anymore. Sometimes they do, but a lot of times they don't. A lot of times the department has a budget and they need to accomplish this many things with the budget. And you can create a need for that budget.
Well, and often too, I know in a lot of situations, especially when it comes to things like new technology, the clients or prospects have no idea what it should cost. And so when you ask that question, it's like, well, I don't know. Tell me what it should cost and why and what the value is.
Right.
So asking them if they have a budget, yeah, I agree with you. I think that's not necessarily a helpful question at that stage.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, one time we were partnering with a company and we found very large company. Again, it was $1 billion-plus company that was looking at buying some analytics and got the CIO on the phone. So everybody was having this conversation and the guy says, look, we don't have anything for this year in the budget, but we're going to start budget planning in about 4 months. And so let's brainstorm and figure out how to make something work. And I'll put something in the budget for this.
Yeah.
So afterwards I talked to sales management and we're saying, look, it would be worth it for you to throw a consultant in there. Call them back and say, hey, why don't we go in there and, you know, we'll work for a couple of days and do this. I mean, just keep that relationship and lock that thing up.
Yeah.
But it was funny because the person on the call came back and said, yeah, they're not going to buy anything for 4 months, so forget it. I'm not going to spend any time on it right now.
That's nuts, especially with a big purchase because those take months.
Yeah, but see, to them, it's like he doesn't even have a budget. He's not even going to have a budget for 4 months, so forget it. I'll call him after the first of the year. That's nothing.
Oh, my goodness. The guy opened a door for them and they closed it. Idiot.
So it's not just calls. It's... You can have great frontline calls or bad frontline calls or whatever happens, but if the whole system has these breaks so that, again, you've got to schedule 600 meetings to close 30 of these things because all this kind of stuff happens, then how do you fix that? And it is a combination of things that fixes it. It's a combination of hiring and visibility and standards and data governance and all kinds of things that make it work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would say for the frontline calling, you've got to have really good people on there, because that's really unlocking the key to the company and saying, this is how you get in here. This is what happens. These are the people. Here's the stakeholders. Here's how to have these conversations. And now you take it to the next level. So nothing that that first person did should have to be repeated again.
Yeah, that makes sense. Wow, this has been really informative. I know that I've always tried to learn more about sales because I'm not naturally a salesperson. And I'm always intrigued. And of course, I've been watching these debates going on online about, is cold calling dead? And, it would have been great for people like me anyway, who hate cold calling, to think that it was. But as I see, especially with marketing automation, the amount of content out there has exploded so massively that, yep, people can do their own research, but the odds of them finding you are still pretty small. So you do still need to do some cold calling to just let people know you exist even, but you have to target it so that you're providing value to them.
Yeah. There's a certain amount of natural skill a person has, but being effective at cold calling isn't something that you've either got it or you don't, because it's something that needs to be developed.
Mm-hmm.
It is fixable. And there's only so many types of people that you're going to talk to on the phone, and there's a predictability with that.
Mm.
So you can structure what you're going to say and what you're going to do when you're very deliberate and you do it right and you do it with a plan.
So if a company is starting to develop that kind of calling plan, I mean, obviously step one is identifying very specifically who your ideal target market is. But what other elements should they be looking at in there?
They really need to look at who's going to be doing the calling.
Okay.
So sometimes I get companies that call and they say, oh, we want you guys to do something. We already have the script. I have never used a script that a company gave us, because it's always something like, hi, Mr. Customer, this is so-and-so calling with such-and-such technologies. Do you have a moment to talk?
Oh, I hate that.
Yeah.
It's like, no.
Well, we're the top provider of blah, 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 and we'd like to be able to present to you ways that you can save money. I mean, it's just the worst ever. So
Yeah. Recently
somebody said, I could never do what you guys do. And I said, do you call people you don't know? And they said, yeah, all the time. I said, that's all we do. So when you're calling them, a person that has a lot of business fluency and they're peers with executives and they're able to have the emotional and intellectual intelligence to have those kinds, that depth of conversation, they can have just as much success on the phone than in person.
How many call attempts are reasonable to make? Because this is another thing that I've read discussions on online, some senior executives writing saying, well, if they don't try to reach me at least 5 times, I don't think they're serious. And yet, again, somebody like me looks at it and thinks, well, I've tried 2 or 3 times, and yet I know the data says 8 is going to be a lot better.
Yeah.
I still am inclined to think, well, I don't want to keep pestering them. So how do you deal with that?
That's a great question, because it does take a lot of attempts. It's not that they don't want to call you back or that they're not interested. They're just busy.
Yes.
And when you think of the people that you're calling, they're working in very interrupt-driven environments. Their day gets chewed up. They're trying to do more with less people. They're very, very busy. So it's not that the intention isn't there. It's just that when there's fires, the first thing that goes out the window are vendor calls.
Right.
It does often take up to 8 attempts to get somebody. But the one thing that I'll say is make sure that those attempts are making a difference. So that's the thing, is making sure that you do that upfront research so that you're not calling into a dead voicemail. And that's first thing. And then second, it really does take that long. The one thing that you can do, though, is always let them off the hook, because I often get people that I know, a lot of messages are getting sort of punitive. This is the last time I'm going to try to call. It's like, well, good, because I'm not going to talk to you. And so it's not the prospect's fault that they're busy.
Yeah.
So, in fact, saying stuff like that just reminds them that they're busy, and that puts it on a negative. Don't remind them that you've left them a bunch of messages. Just keep it really brief and just chase them down.
So what do you say? Like, if you're not reminding them that you've called previously, because you don't want them to feel guilty particularly, do you keep altering what it is you say in each message?
Slightly. Yeah, you would say slightly. So maybe, and the other thing that you'd want to look at too is if you put a bunch of calls into somebody and they're not calling you back, let's say you called a few people in that company and they're not calling you back. The other thing you could look at is something going on at that company? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times when you see a population in a company not calling you back, well, look for a press release. Yeah. Maybe they just went through an acquisition or something and nobody's going to be calling you back. So then you shelf it and call them later.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on that is not making an impact, and you want to make sure everything you do leaves an impact. So yeah, calling somebody, and you would slightly alter it. So you would have kind of versions 1, 2, 3 of messages. And also you don't have to leave a long message. You don't have to leave this big, long message about, you know, what you want to talk about or make assumptions, because that's another thing. You really don't know what you're calling into. They have their own unique problems. So you just make some value statements, who you work with, why they work with them, but then you can slightly adjust that each time.
So you would be saying that, let's say, you know, that I've read that they're having problems with customer experience, let's say in my case, and we've worked with these other people and think maybe we have something that could help you. Like, how do you actually phrase that?
Yeah, so you would mention some real specific problems of companies that are like them, or, you know, whatever it might be, because again, you don't want to get too narrow because they'll think, oh no, we don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So like in your case, you work with a lot of well-known companies, so you could just name drop.
Yeah.
And that's a trust building, like, oh, okay, well, these guys trust her, let's bring her in.
Yeah.
Right? Or let's at least talk. So you don't want to over-inform, because you can over-inform yourself to misunderstanding. If people say they're not reaching people, I'll say, how many times are you trying to call them? And if they tell me 2 or 3, I'm like, you need to double, triple that.
Yeah. Well, I will flagellate myself here and make myself start doubling and tripling.
It's not that people don't want to talk or there's not an opportunity or anything like that. It was funny. I told one of our customers something like that a while back, and I said, and they'll apologize when you reach them. And then the next time I talked to them, they said, oh my gosh, that exact thing happened. They said, I'm so sorry, I haven't been able to get back with you. So again, the opportunity didn't go away. The interest didn't go away. Sometimes the sales rep goes away. You just have to turn up the volume a little bit and just hang with it a little bit longer.
So how do you know when to quit? How do you know when they really aren't interested?
You don't if you never spoke with them. So you can just set a personal limit. I know at some point you just got to shelf it.
Yeah.
Some people just don't respond. It's you're not going to talk to everybody.
Right.
But you will talk to a lot more people when you increase your number of attempts at them.
Well, thank you very much for responding to my call or email. And this has been very informative. And I know that it's a subject that a lot of companies, as you say, of all sizes do struggle with. And we've all been on the receiving end of an awful lot of bad sales calls. So cold calling, it seems, is not dead, but it really definitely needs to be done better. Well, having listened to what Marianne had to say, I am going to try really, really hard to force myself to make those 8 touches before I give up on speaking to somebody at a company. But I don't know if I'm going to manage to actually bring myself to do that. But I'll try. Because like most of you, I suspect, sales is crucial to keeping Frank Reactions afloat. And speaking of sales, I've had a few more really wonderful reviews come in for the book People Shock, The Path to Profits When Customers Rule. And finally, people are starting to post some of their reviews on Amazon, which is really exciting. I must say, Amazon is doing some pretty weird thing when it comes to what reviews show where. Some days a review will show up on .com, other days on .ca, sometimes both, sometimes none. They come, they go. There's some really weird stuff going on at Amazon. I've got to say, as time is going by, I'm becoming less and less thrilled with the company that I held up in my book as being a shining example of customer service. It's kind of sad, really. I'm not going to take your time with reading them all, but I do want to thank Jay Noble, whose 5-star review is headed, "Be prepared to bookmark, underline, highlight, and dog ear a lot of incredible sections for your future reference." And Robert Morris, who is a Hall of Fame top reviewer for Amazon, and he also gave it 5 stars, saying, "The increasing value of the human element in a world that becomes more volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous each day." And then goes on to give an extremely detailed review of the book, which those of you who are debating whether or not to buy it will doubtless find useful. And thank you also to Tina Pham, whose review says, "Tema shares her insights, knowledge, and years of experience in a well-written book that is a must-have in this digital era." And over on the Amazon.ca site, Randy Lee, in his 5-star review, writes, "Highly recommended," as his subject line. I'm sure that eventually they will not all be 5 stars, but I've got to say, I'm kind of treasuring this moment. If you have read the book or are reading the book and would like to leave a review on Amazon, that would be totally wonderful. That's all for today. Have a wonderful week. Bye.